has stolen your voice. You are truly his slave." The dragon turned its head back to Alex, nodding slowly in pain and defeat. As Alex looked at the dragon, he saw something he had never expected to see. It broke his heart and filled him with an inner rage at the same time. The dragon in front of him was crying. "I will free you of this curse," Alex said. "I swear by all that I am, I will free you from Jabez's evil." The dragon might have smiled, but Alex couldn't tell. After swearing his oath to free the dragon, both the valley and the dragon began to vanish like mist under the morning sun. The magic that had trapped Darthon was broken. Alex looked out across the fading emptiness, knowing that the dragon would never reveal to Jabez what had happened. Alex took a deep breath, bowed his head, and spoke one last time before returning to his physical body. "I will free you and all of Jaro from the evil of Jabez."
"Alex," Waylon's voice came softly in the darkness. "Alex, are you all right?"
"I am fine," Alex answered slowly. "How long?"
"You have stood motionless since just after dawn, and the sun has already set," Waylon answered. "The healers are afraid. You mentioned a dragon."
"The dragon of Conmar," Alex said. "The dragon that Jabez keeps as a slave. That trial has passed. Jabez will know nothing of it. Let the healers back in and I will wake Darthon." Alex heard Waylon leave, and he slowly opened his eyes. The room was still dimly lit, and Darthon lay resting on his bed. Nothing looked different, but many things had changed. Slowly, Alex stretched his stiff body, then took a few steps to the side of the bed. His senses were heightened, so the sound of Waylon and the healers returning seemed incredibly loud to Alex. "Darthon," Alex said softly once the healers had taken their places. "Darthon, it is time to wake up." Darthon's eyes fluttered and opened. He tried to sit up but was too weak to manage it. The healers, including three more hooded figures, propped him up on pillows. Another healer gave him something to drink. Darthon took a swallow, coughed, and then finished the drink. Alex watched but did not speak, and Darthon's eyes never left his face. He lifted his hand to Alex, and Alex reached out and took it.
"Praise the ancients, you have come," Darthon whispered. "In our darkest hours, you have come."
"Rest," said Alex. "You need food and rest. We can speak later." Darthon nodded and Alex turned to go. Waylon looked at him with an unasked question on his face. He followed Alex out of the room and down the hallway where Timold was waiting for them.
"Darthon, he is recovered?"
Timold asked. "He is out of danger and will recover fully soon enough," said Alex. Timold breathed a sigh of relief.
"You have done our people a great service this day, and your names will always be honored here. Come, I will lead you to a place where you can eat and rest."
"Waylon may want food and rest, but I need something else," Alex said. "A quiet place, a garden, perhaps. Some place I can be alone for a time."
"As you wish,"
Timold replied, a puzzled look on his face.
"After great acts of magic, a wizard often needs to be alone to clear his mind,"
Waylon said to Timold.
"My friend will recover, but solitude will help him recover more quickly."
"Then it shall be as he wishes,"
Timold answered.
"There is a garden here in the palace, and I will see that you are not disturbed."
Timult led Alex and Waylon through the palace and into the garden.
"I will place guards at the four entrances to the garden,"
he said, looking at Alex to make sure that was acceptable.
"If you should require anything, one of the guards will get it for you."
"Thank you," Alex answered absently, and walked into the garden alone. His mind was too full for anything but the memory of the crying dragon. Alex didn't notice Waylon and Timult leave. He just walked. When he came to a wall, he turned and walked in a new direction. He didn't keep track of how many times he paced through the garden. After a long time, he sat down on a bench near the center of the garden and cupped his head in his hands. The crying dragon filled his mind, a dragon whose voice had been taken. It was so evil that Alex had trouble believing it was true, but he knew that it was. Whatever Jabez had done other than this, whomever he had hurt, no matter how many people he had put in danger, none of it was as evil as stealing the voice of the dragon. It was like stealing a piece of the dragon's soul. Killing a dragon was sometimes necessary. Alex had killed an evil dragon on his very first adventure. Making a bargain with a dragon was possible. He had befriended the ancient dragon Salinor on the Isle of Bones. But to take a dragon's voice away and enslave it was cruel, wicked, and hateful. It was like leaving a wounded animal to suffer. It was an evil like nothing Alex had ever faced before. Alex sat in the garden until late into the night, his mind replaying what he had seen in the valley. The dragon had been ashamed about what had happened, but it was more than shame that made it cry. The dragon was in pain. Its very soul had been torn in pieces by evil. The dragon cried, and Alex, alone in the garden, cried as well. Chapter 15. The Sea Elves. Alex was still sitting in the garden when the gray light of morning crept over the horizon. A chill ran through him, but not because of the cold air. Someone else had entered the garden, in spite of Timold's guards at the entrances. Alex didn't look up. He knew who the visitor was, but he wasn't sure why she was there. "I am surprised that Timold's guards let you pass," Alex said without lifting his head. The person stopped short in obvious surprise. There was silence for a moment, and then she replied,
"Guards often see only what they are watching for."
"And it is hard to see what does not wish to be seen," Alex said, finally looking up. "But why do you come here in secret? What is it that you want from me?" The person standing before him wore a dark cloak with a hood.
"To understand," she answered.
"Understand? What could I teach an elf such as yourself?" Again the figure paused in surprise. Then she took a small step forward.
"We know Vankin's name, and the man you travel with looks like Vankin, but we do not see his magic. Your name is new to us. We see even less about you than Vankin. You both carry staffs. You survived a storm that should have destroyed your small boat, and you came with the mage wind in your sail. We see many things. We see that you carry a great sword from the ancient people. We see that you have come at a time and to a place where you are needed most. We see all this, but we do not see who or what you are, and we do not understand."
"And yet you hide yourselves among these men," Alex said. "Your magic tries to hide you from all who might see."
"We hide because we must. We hide because of who we once were and what we have become. We hide because of shame," the elf said. "You hide but not because of shame. And you do not trust what you cannot see, Alex said.
Trust must be earned.
Trust is a two-way street. If I tell you what you wish to know and show you what you wish to see, will you also tell me about yourself and your people?
If you speak truly, I will tell you all that I can. I cannot tell you all, though, for I do not know everything you may wish to ask.
It will be enough. Alex sat up straight. You cannot see what I am because I do not wish to be seen. My magic is hidden from most because to show you my magic in this land would warn my enemy of my approach. I do not wish the evil in Khanmar to know I am here, so I remain hidden. I do not wish that same evil to find my friend Vankin, so I hide him as well.
There is wisdom in what you say, but I must doubt your words, the elf said. Magic knows magic. Power knows power. From a distance, perhaps you could hide your magic from another, but given the distance between us, I do not think that is possible.
It is possible, but few know how to master it, Alex said. I can show you. It is not hard, but I will need something from you first.
And what is that? The elf asked skeptically.
The smallest seed of your trust. Your name, Alex replied. The elf stood in silence for a few minutes, considering Alex's words. The silence grew between the two of them as the sun slowly rose over the garden walls. A bird started to sing nearby, and finally the elf answered.
Very well. I see no hidden meaning in your words, no trap, and any possible danger is to myself alone. My name is Alia. Alia of the Sea Elves.
Then look, Alia of the Sea Elves. Look at me and see what you wish to know. Alex concentrated so that his magic would be revealed only to Alia and no other. Slowly he peeled back the layers of his magic that hid him from the world, the unexpected layers that his dragon magic made possible. He would allow Alia to see his wizard's powers, but no more. His powers as dragon lord and his dragon self would remain hidden. Alia's sharp intake of breath told Alex that he had been successful. He did nothing for a moment, and then he skillfully hid himself once more. Alia seemed unable to speak, too surprised by what she had seen to even move.
I have never seen a wizard's magic before,
Alia stammered.
I did not know that it was so great. You have so much more magic than we elves. I had been told, but having never seen such magic...
I understand, Alex said when Alia seemed unable to go on. Do you trust me now?
I trust you, and I will tell my people that they may trust you as well, Alia said.
Thank you. Now, please, will you tell me why you hide? What shame do your people carry? I do not understand why you hide even among the humans that you seem to trust. Alia sat on the bench next to Alex.
What do you know of the Sea Elves?
Alex shook his head. Not much. Rumors and old stories, mostly.
That is not so strange, she said, nodding. We are known only to a few, and those few we trust do not speak of us to outsiders.
She hesitated a moment, then said,
And because I trust you, I will not hide from you.
Alia reached up and pulled back her hood, revealing as beautiful a face as Alex had ever seen. She shook her head once, allowing her long jet-black hair to fall freely over her shoulders. She looked at Alex with piercing gray eyes.
Alex was stunned.
He had thought sea elves might have hidden themselves because they were disfigured in some way, or bore some kind of mark of their shame. Looking at Aaliyah, Alex knew that he had been completely wrong. "The shame of the sea elves is an ancient one," Aaliyah said, smiling slightly. "So first, you must know who we once were."
"You are not always sea elves?" Alex asked.
"Long ago, almost before the memory of men and dwarves, my people were known as dark elves," Aaliyah answered. "We loved the earth and the riches that could be found deep underground. We loved the things we could make from metals and stone and gems. We created many things of great splendor. We made the finest weapons and armor, and we found many secrets of magic that perhaps we should not have found."
Aaliyah paused for a moment as if lost in memories of an ancient time.
"Only the oldest of my people know the whole story. None of the sea elves now living were alive when evil came upon the dark elves, when creatures of evil hunted and destroyed my people. What none but my people know, and perhaps the eldest of our relations in the known lands, is that the greatest evil and the greatest destruction was summoned by the dark elves themselves."
"How can that be?" Alex asked. "I have never heard of an elf turning to evil."
"Some have turned to evil, but I speak of something else," Aaliyah continued. "The greatest evil came because the high lords and ladies of my people thought they had learned enough. They thought they were wise, and that they could control all the known lands. They believed that they could stop all evil everywhere. They thought they could change the land to suit their own needs and desires, and that they could control even the most powerful of creatures with their magic. They believed that they could tame dragons, griffins, and other creatures, making them pets or even slaves."
"They were seeking for more power than they should have," Alex said.
"Yes, and they would not stop," Aaliyah said. "When they failed to tame and enslave the most powerful of creatures, their pride led them to do greater evil. I do not know what they did, though some say that they summoned up shadows to serve them. They gave solid forms to things that should have remained formless. Some say they gave life to other things, but whatever they did, their creations eventually turned against them. It was their own creations that caused the greatest destruction among my people, as well as the destruction of many who were our friends."
"That is the greatest shame of the sea elves," Alex said. "The destruction of those you once called friends."
"It is," Aaliyah answered weakly. "For trying to take more power than we should have, for thinking we were wiser than the makers and the guardians, and for causing so much destruction, we are shamed and cursed."
"Cursed?" Alex asked.
"We are cursed to live our lives at sea, away from the land we love so much," Aaliyah said. "We have only small towns in hidden places where we build our ships, but nothing more. Our magic was once the source of our pride, and it is now weakened and tied to the sea. The farther from the sea we travel, the weaker our magic becomes. In the lands we once called home, our magic is nearly non-existent. So it shall be until the time of change, when Darlach Est Messer comes, and the nameless dragon with him."
"Darlach Est Messer," Alex repeated, remembering the words he had read in the graveyard so long ago. "When will this Master of Dragons come? When will the nameless dragon appear?"
"You know these words?"
Aaliyah replied, a slightly surprised look on her face.
"It is said that in a time when all the lands are in danger, when darkness threatens to take control and wipe away all that is good, Darlach Est Messer will come and break the power of darkness. Then there will be a great change in the lands, and the curse of the sea elves will be removed.
What more do you know about Darlach Est Messer? Alex asked. Aaliyah shook her head.
Only what I have said. Why is this so important to you?
I've seen those words before, Alex said slowly. The time of danger may not be so far away. Darlach Est Messer is a piece of a puzzle I do not understand, but I know that I need to figure it out.
Why do you say the time of danger may not be far?
Aaliyah pressed. Because the evil of Khanmar is only a part of the evil that I'm hunting, Alex answered. There is a group called the Brotherhood, and they are seeking to gain control over all the known lands.
We have seen many evils come and go, Aaliyah said. Why should this evil be different than those before it?
Because the Brotherhood has been working their evil for a very long time. Because they are careful, hiding themselves and taking their time. Most wizards do not even believe they exist. They do not believe that such a group could go unknown for so long.
Pride. Their pride blinds them to the truth.
In part, the Brotherhood is powerful as well as patient. They have been at work for hundreds, maybe even thousands of years, and when one of their plans fails, they simply move on to the next.
I can try to find out more about the legend of Darlach Est Messer, Aaliyah said. It will not be easy, as only the elders of my people know the whole story, and they are reluctant to speak of such things.
Please try, Alex said.
I will do what I can, Aaliyah promised. May I ask something of you?
Ask what you will, Alex said.
I will ask that you do not speak of what I have said to anyone. Not Vankin, not another wizard, not even another elf. The shame and the story of the sea elves should not be shared.
As you wish, Alex answered, touching his staff to his forehead, the sign of a wizard's vow.
Then we should go,
Aaliyah said, getting to her feet. Go?
There are many troubles in this land, and the kingdoms to the north have called on Darthon for aid. He will need the advice of wizards. It is time for plans to be made.
Is Darthon recovered? Alex asked.
Darthon has rested, and though he is still weak, he will want to speak to you and Vankin, Aaliyah said.
Alex stood up and stretched the soreness out of his body. Aaliyah pulled the hood over her head, but she did not move from the bench.
Go to the east entrance. The guard will guide you back into the palace.
And you?
I will make my own way,
Aaliyah answered.
I must speak with my people. I will share with them what you have told me and shown me. We may meet again later, when Darthon calls his council.
Alex opened the door to a large sitting room and found Waylon next to the fire in deep thought. The old wizard looked up when Alex entered, then he jumped to his feet and moved toward Alex.
I'm glad you're here at last, Waylon said in a lowered voice. Tell me what happened between you and Darthon. You mentioned a dragon.
Alex nodded. Jabez has indeed enslaved a dragon, and he forced the dragon to entrap Darthon's mind and soul. I was able to free Darthon and send him back to his body.
And the dragon?
Waylon asked.
I wasn't able to free the dragon, at least not yet, Alex said, frowning. But I have vowed to release him from Jabez's evil.
He set his jaw and looked at Waylon. It is a vow I intend to keep. Waylon put his hand on Alex's shoulder and squeezed.
And I will help you keep that vow, in whatever way you need me to.
Thank you, my friend, Alex said. Now, has there been any trouble since last night?
No. Our hosts have been kind enough, and they have provided everything we might hope for."
Waylon looked at the door, and then back to Alex.
"We've been invited to join Darthon for the midday meal, but you and I must speak before then. These men of Westland are not a talkative lot, and I've discovered almost nothing that might help us defeat Jabez. Then there's the question of the elves. I'm sure you've realized that the hooded figures we've seen here are elves."
"Yes, they are sea elves," Alex said.
"Sea elves,"
Waylon repeated in wonder.
"That explains why the elves in Darthon's room have said nothing to me."
"They can't tell you're a wizard," Alex explained. "I've hidden you too well, my friend, and the elves can't see your magic. I think that scares them."
"Yes, it would,"
Waylon said. He paused, then frowned.
"How do you know all this, Alex?"
"One of the sea elves, a maiden, came and talked with me this morning," Alex said, "though I'm not sure the rest of her people will be happy that she did."
"Probably not,"
Waylon agreed.
"What did you tell her, this elf maid, who may have defied her elders to speak with you?"
"I let her see my wizard powers," Alex replied. "I explained why we are hidden and planted a few seeds of trust. She's going to talk with her people and let them know they can trust us. I hope that the rest of these sea elves will be friendlier to us."
"Dangerous,"
Waylon said.
"While I don't believe any elf would work for Jabez or the Brotherhood, what you have done could be dangerous to our mission here."
"Perhaps. But danger is part of the game we play," Alex agreed. "Since I saved Darthon from the dragon's trap, he should be willing to grant us passage through his land. But I have the feeling that we might need the help of the sea elves to finish things here in Jaro. It would be very helpful if they trusted us."
"Yes, I imagine you are right,"
Waylon said. "Now, I don't suppose you know where I can take a bath?" Alex asked. He gestured to his clothes, which were the same ones he'd been wearing while they had been at sea. They were dry, but stained with salt, and they smelled of old fish and seaweed. Waylon gave a slight laugh and showed Alex around the rooms that had been prepared for them. Apart from the large sitting room, there were two bedrooms, each with a smaller sitting room attached to it, and a fair-sized bathroom with running hot and cold water. Alex was pleased to see that the bathroom also contained a massive brass tub. Alex spent much longer in the bath than he really needed to. The size of the tub allowed him to stretch out and relax, and the hot water and steam helped ease the tension and soreness in his body. He couldn't remember the last time he had felt so clean. The only thing missing was food. As he left the bathroom, his stomach growled loudly, reminding him that even wizards needed to eat. He and Waylon hadn't eaten much while fighting the storm at sea, and he'd had nothing at all since arriving the day before. He quickly dressed, and then laid his sword and his magic bag on the bed, as was customary for guests in most places, and went to find Waylon. As he entered the main sitting room, a knock came at the door. A guard had come to escort them to Lord Darthon. Alex noted that the guard was courteous when asking them to follow him, but, like the other guards he'd met, this man did not try to talk with them at all. For some reason, the silence and standoffishness of the guards troubled Alex. He knew that they were unsure of Waylon's and his motives, and, as wizards were not common, not sure how to talk to them, but it seemed odd that they didn't even try.
"Leave your staff,"
Waylon whispered.
"It will be safe enough, and we don't want to frighten these people."
Alex leaned his staff next to the fireplace, and then he and Waylon followed their guide through the palace. Alex looked closely at everything he could see as they walked. He noted the rich decorations in the rooms they went by, the thick rugs, colorful tapestries, and comfortable furniture. Most of all, he noticed how much gold was used as decoration. There were trinkets of different kinds on the tables, golden lamps hanging from the walls and ceiling, and gold-crusted armor and weapons all over the place. If nothing else, Darthon's kingdom was a wealthy one.
"My lords,"
the guard finally said, opening a door and bowing. The room they entered was not a large hall or room. It was more like a family dining room, with a round table in the middle and 10 or 12 chairs along the table's rim. The far wall of the room was made up of windows that were open, letting in both air and sunlight. Darthon was seated at the table, Timold beside him. Places were set for both Alex and Waylon, but no one else, which surprised Alex. He had assumed there would be more people who had questions about how and why he and Waylon had come here.
"Ah, my friends,"
Darthon said, standing up and leaning on the table for support.
"I hope that I may call you friends. You have done me a great service."
"Lord Darthon," Alex said, bowing slightly. He was pleased to see that the color had returned to Darthon's face.
"We are at your service,"
Waylon said, also bowing.
"Please sit,"
Darthon said, waving his hand at the table.
"Timold, ring for the servers. We will eat and talk, if that's agreeable to you."
"We did not expect to dine so privately,"
Waylon said, taking his seat.
"I'm sure that many of your lords will have questions for us."
"Oh, I'm sure they do," Darthon said with a chuckle. "But their questions will have to wait. I am still king, and my questions come first. I may not keep many secrets from my lords, but as most of my questions are of a private nature, I thought this would be best."
"A private nature?"
Waylon asked.
"Ah, here is the food," Darthon said. "Not the common fare of a midday meal, but not a great feast either. I hope you see something you like."
The servers entered, and what they brought both looked and smelled wonderful. There was bread and cheese, roasted meat that Alex thought was venison, fish, some type of roasted bird, and several platters of vegetables. Alex's stomach growled again, and he was glad the servers were making enough noise to cover it. The table was quickly laid, and the servers departed before Darthon spoke again.
"As I mentioned, my questions for you are of a private nature," Darthon said. "My sickness, or lack of a better word, is a private matter to me. What were you told about it?"
"Only that you had been sick for several weeks, and had been lying senseless in bed for 10 days,"
Waylon replied.
"Yes. Weeks of sickness that was not sickness," said Darthon. "I was plagued by dreams, nightmares. I could get no rest at all. Then, one night, I became trapped in the nightmare. I was lost, unable to wake or find my way home."
"It was an evil spell," Alex said, "sent from Khanmar to keep you and your people in check, and then to destroy you."
"Keep us in check?"
Timold asked. "Darthon was unable to speak, to command. Your people had no leader," Alex said.
"Yes, I see,"
Timold said.
"We could take care of our own kingdom, but..."
"But there were calls from our friends and allies to the north seeking our aid," Darthon said. "Without my word, my people were unable to send assistance." "That was what the Lord of Khanmar wanted,"
Waylon said,
"to delay you, to keep you from sending aid to those in need."
"But then you came into my dream," Darthon said, looking at Alex. "You told me that my people needed me. You reminded me of Valora."
"Yes," Alex said. "Remembering your people and your home was all you really needed to find your way back."
"It was a terrible place,"
Darthon said, some of the color draining from his face.
"A place so empty and desolate."
"Do not think of that now," Alex said. "Such dreams are best left in the shadows and forgotten, if possible."
"Yes, of course," Darthon said. "I will try to forget the dream. But I will not forget the debt I owe you, Master Taylor, for coming to my aid."
"I am glad that I could help," Alec said.
Now, for another matter, which is also very close to me, Darthon said. I am told that you claim my nephew Joshua as a friend, that you met him during your travels in Eastland, and you were companions until you reached Midland.
Yes, that is true, Alec said. I am troubled to hear that Joshua is missing. Do you suspect he could be a hostage of the Lord of Conmar?
The Lord of Conmar would not be so bold as to openly say he is holding Joshua hostage, Timold said.
No, not so bold as that. Not yet, at any rate, Darthon agreed. Still, he hints that Joshua may be among the hostages. He says that he will check, and if Joshua is there, he will review his case and try to get him released.
Case? Released? I don't understand, Alec said. Has some law been broken?
No law that we are bound to obey, Timold said angrily.
A ploy, Waylon said. Jabez no doubt pretends to have some legal claim on his prisoners, so he can hold them without actually calling them what they are. Hostages.
And he can also deny holding anyone, as he never makes a real claim stating what crime they have committed, Darthon said. If he made a claim, he would also have to name a punishment or a price to set the person free. He has been doing this for some time, and I have to wonder how many people of Westland he holds in his dungeons.
Something will have to be done about that, Alec said.
In time, Waylon said.
Yes, in time, Darthon agreed. But first, will you tell me the story of how you met Joshua, and about your travels together? I have not seen my nephew in almost 2 years, and to be honest, he is more a son than a nephew to me.
Of course, Alec said. So Alec told the story of how he and Joshua had met, and how they'd escaped the men sent by the Lord of Conmar to capture Joshua. He told the story up to the point when they'd met Waylon in the city of Shinmar. Waylon then told of their voyage across the sea and the encounter with the sea serpent, being sure to give Joshua credit for his courage in fighting the monster.
Joshua was unaware that we are wizards, Waylon explained. We have been in hiding since coming to this land. When we parted, he was going to make his way home by the fastest route possible. If we had known...
You might have been able to protect him, Darthon finished, though I see that you did keep him safe for a time, and I am grateful for that. I also see that I have been a poor host, keeping you talking and leaving you no time to eat.
We've managed to eat a fair amount, Waylon replied with a smile, looking at Alec, who had his mouth full.
You have given me some comfort, and that is a gift in such troubled times, Darthon said. Now, I should rest. The healers don't like that I'm up and about so much already.
You need to move around to get your strength back, Alec said.
So I tell them, but they have their own ways, Darthon said. You've seen some of them. Our friends. The ones who tried to heal me before you came.
The sea elves, Alec said. Yes, we've seen them.
We do not name them so openly, Darthon said. We normally just say our friends. They don't like to be talked about, or have outsiders know about them.
And we are outsiders, Waylon said.
Yes, Darthon said. I will tell you plainly that they have expressed some doubt about you two.
Their doubts may be less now than they were before, Alec said. But if their doubts remain... We will find some way to answer them.
Good. Very good, Darthon said. I may not know much about wizards or magic, but I do know about men. I can see in your faces and hear in your words that you are good men. I don't know what troubles our friends, but I, at least, am willing to trust you.
Darthon stood to leave, and Timolt was quick to help him. Alec and Waylon stood and bowed slightly as a sign of respect.
Tomorrow,
Timold said softly.
What? Oh, yes, Darthon said. Tomorrow I will call a council of my lords.
I would be pleased if both of you would attend as well. There are many things to be discussed, and plans to be made.
As you wish,
Waylon answered. Darthon left with Timold, and a guard escorted Alex and Waylon back to their room. Alex's mind was full of thoughts. Darthon trusted them, but the Sea Elves had doubts. Alex thought that some of the Sea Elves would trust them once Aaliyah had a chance to explain what he'd told her, but he couldn't be sure. The Sea Elves had been hidden for many years, taking little or no part in the greater matters of the lands they lived in. They would not trust quickly, and he didn't think they would be willing to come out of hiding.
Not what I expected,
Waylon said when he and Alex were back in their rooms.
I suppose we'll have to wait until tomorrow to see where we stand.
I don't know what to expect anymore, Alex replied. I think Darthon will let us pass freely through his lands, but our quest has become something more. It's no longer just about you and I reaching Khanmar and facing Jabez. Most of Westland is at war, and we have to help them. It wasn't part of our plan, but we can't leave them to fight alone.
It wasn't part of my plan, you mean,
Waylon said.
You've learned a great deal, my friend, and you are right. We can't leave them to fight alone, not now, and not against the Brotherhood.
Waylon fell silent as he took a seat beside the fire. Alex stood for a moment, and then picked up his staff. He wanted to say something, but he didn't know what to say or how to say it.
Tomorrow,
Waylon finally said,
we will make new plans tomorrow.
Chapter 16. War Council. As tired as he was, Alex had trouble sleeping that night. His mind kept going over the plan that Waylon had made for them when they first came to Jaro. It was a simple plan, easy to follow, and it wasn't going to work. The plan had been too sketchy, and things had changed more than Alex had expected. Somewhere in his half-sleep, Alex heard his own voice speaking to him. Waylon made a simple plan because he knew it would change, his own voice said, almost laughing as it spoke. Just because you couldn't see that things would change doesn't mean that Waylon couldn't. Alex's sleep was filled with strange dreams that he couldn't see clearly, and when he woke, the images and memories slipped away from him. Awake, his mind was instantly filled with questions that he couldn't answer. How big was Jabez's army? How many hostages did he have in his dungeons? Where was the Axe of Sundering hidden? If Jabez had made a dragon a slave, what other creatures might he have under his control? He had seen those wolf creatures in Midland. How many of them did Jabez have? And how would he use them here in Westland? There was so much to do, too much that was unknown, and no time to waste. Finally, in the hours before sunrise, Alex fell into a light sleep. His mind slipped into a dream that was so real that he wasn't sure that he was dreaming. He stood on the shore of a vast underground lake, but it wasn't pitch dark as it should have been. The rocks in the cave seemed to glow with a pale green light, making the water look inky black. Something in his dream pulled him toward the water, but he resisted. He could see his breath puff like clouds from his mouth, and he was certain that the water of the lake would be deadly cold. This was not a lake for swimming, not if you wanted to stay alive. His dream still pulled at him, forcing him to step to the edge of the water. His hand reached out and touched the still water. Pain shot up his arm and he jerked back, but his dream dragged him forward. Fighting with all his strength, Alex clawed at the rocky beach, trying to crawl away from the lake, but nothing he did seemed to work. He was being dragged into the cold, cold water. He was sure he would die. He heard a splash as his body fell into the water, and with a gasp, Alex woke up. He had fallen out of his bed, his legs tangled in his blankets. He looked around wildly, but he was in his bedroom, and everything was dry. Pulling his legs free of the blanket, Alex stood up and looked down at his right hand. It was dry, just like everything else, but the icy cold pain lingered. He stretched his fingers to work some blood into them, and at the back of his mind, his Ogash whispered to him,
"The lake is the key. That is where you will find what you seek. But will you pay the price to claim it?"
Alex sat on the edge of his bed, rubbing warmth and life back into his hand. He trusted his Ogash, but he didn't like what it told him. The icy cold lake scared him, and he had no idea what price he would have to pay if he ever found his way there. Unwilling to risk another nightmare, Alex got dressed. He made his way to the large sitting room that he shared with Waylon and piled logs in the cold fireplace. With a wave of his hand, he ignited the logs. He sat down close to the fire, holding his still cold right hand out to the heat. "I slept on my arm," Alex told himself. "It's just gone numb, that's why it's cold." He knew that wasn't true. Somehow, it was his nightmare that had caused his arm to ache with cold, but in the pre-dawn darkness, the thought made him feel better. He flexed his fingers, and even though he didn't want to, he thought about the lake in his dream. An underground lake that was deadly cold would be a good place to hide the axe of sundering. Nobody would willingly go into such a lake, so the axe wouldn't be found by accident. If Jabez hid the axe there, however, he must have some way of recovering it. If Jabez was forced to leave Conmar Castle, he certainly wouldn't leave the axe behind. Could he hide it at the bottom of a lake without having a way to get it if he needed it? He wouldn't dare leave any clue to where the axe was. So how? Alex thought for a long time, but he didn't find any answers. It was possible that Jabez had some servant or slave who could go into the lake and get the axe for him, but no, that didn't seem likely. Anyone holding the axe was a threat to Jabez. The dark wizard wouldn't trust anyone with it. So, if not a slave, then who? Or maybe, what? About 2 hours later, Waylon came into the room. He looked stern, as if he'd already spent a great deal of time thinking about things he didn't like. When he saw Alex, the look on his face changed to concern.
"Trouble sleeping?"
Waylon asked, putting more wood on the fire. "Too many thoughts and dreams," Alex replied. "Though nothing that won't find its own answer, in time."
"I imagine we'll get some answers today, though I can't guess what those answers might be," Waylon said. "Still, no sense worrying about it until we know how things stand."
Alex nodded and remained silent. Waylon went to the table and took several papers and scrolls out of his magic bag. He shuffled through them, occasionally muttering to himself. An hour later, servants appeared, bringing Alex and Waylon breakfast. Waylon moved his papers to a chair, and the table was quickly filled with all kinds of food. The servant, while polite, said very little. Alex got up from his chair beside the fire and joined Waylon at the table.
"Are you finished thinking yet?"
Waylon asked as he filled his own plate. "Thinking and yet not thinking at all," Alex answered. "My mind is too full and completely empty at the same time."
"Well, let it be empty for now. I suspect it will be full again before this day is done."
"Do you think anything will be decided on today? Matters of war can often take a lot of time and even more discussion before anything is decided."
"True, but I think the decisions, or most of them, are already made. Darthon and his people will go to war, I'm sure of that. As to where they go to war, well,
I hope that decision has not yet been made. Why? The attack against Darthon came from Conmar. Some, maybe even most, of Darthon's lords will want revenge for that. Conmar also holds the hostages, including Joshua, and Darthon will want to free them if he can. We will need to guide him away from anything so foolish as an assault on Conmar Castle.
Would it be foolish? Maybe a direct assault would be best.
Without knowing the size of Jabez's army, I don't think going straight to Conmar is a good plan. Apart from his army, Jabez is a wizard. A dark wizard, yes, but he still has a great deal of power, and who knows how many magical friends as well.
Without more information, we can hardly move at all, Alex said with a sigh.
Oh, we can move,
Waylon said, biting into a sausage.
We just want to make sure our first move is not also our last.
Alex let the conversation drop and concentrated on his breakfast. Waylon was right. Of course they could move. Jabez probably expected them to move, but maybe not so soon. If he still believed that Darthon was trapped in the dragon's spell, then he wouldn't expect the Southern Kingdom to move until Darthon was dead and a new king appointed, which could take a long time, depending on if Darthon had any heirs. If they moved when Jabez didn't expect them to, they might be able to surprise the army of Conmar. As Alex was pushing away his plate, a knock came at the door. Waylon, who had finished his breakfast and was back to studying his papers, got up and answered it. A group of 7 soldiers stood outside. 6 of the soldiers stood against the wall, 3 to either side, and the 7th in front of the door.
"Masters," the soldier in front began, "Lord Darthon calls you to his council, if you will please come with us."
"As Lord Darthon wishes,"
Waylon answered, picking up his staff and turning slightly toward Alex. Alex understood what Waylon meant. Today, they were not simply guests, but wizards, and they would carry their staffs to show who and what they were. Alex quickly went to his room and retrieved his staff, and then he and Waylon followed the soldier. As they moved through the door, 2 of the soldiers turned to follow directly behind their guide. The remaining 4 men waited for Alex and Waylon to pass by, and then they turned and followed behind them.
"Ceremony,"
Waylon said quietly to Alex. Alex didn't reply. Ceremony was an important part of a peaceful kingdom, and as this was Darthon's kingdom, he made the rules. They followed their guide through the palace, finally stopping outside a pair of massive wood and metal doors. Many people were crowded in front of the doors, but they moved aside for the men leading Alex and Waylon. To Alex's surprise, they did not enter a hall or meeting room, but walked into the open air of a garden. Darthon sat in a massive stone chair, backed by several soldiers and flanked by Timold on his right, and a man Alex didn't recognize on his left. There were 2 empty seats to the right of Timold, obviously meant for Waylon and himself. The remaining space was taken up with chairs set up in a half-circle, facing Darthon. Important-looking men, clearly Darthon's lords, occupied most of the chairs. Standing behind the lords were about 20 men dressed like travelers, all wearing weapons. Alex also saw a small group of 12 people standing off to the side. They were all hooded, and Alex knew instantly they were sea elves. He also saw 8 dwarves in full battle armor. 2 of the dwarves had removed their helmets and were sitting down, but they all looked more than a little grumpy.
"I didn't know there were dwarves in Jaro," Alex whispered to Waylon.
"Not many that I know of. They live in the far north,"
Waylon whispered back. Darthon rose from his stone chair.
"Ah, my friends, now that we are all here, we may begin."
"About time to,"
one of the dwarfs grumbled, none too quietly.
"We all know the reason for this meeting," Darthon went on as if he hadn't heard.
The question is not if we should go to war against Khon Ma. The question is where do we make our stand, and when?
My lord,
Timold said, rising to his feet,
our armies have been preparing for some time. We are ready to face the battle whenever and wherever you command.
My lord,
the man to Darthon's left also rose to his feet.
May I speak?
Yes, Lord Belfort. What course do you suggest?
Darthon asked.
We should take the battle to Khon Ma,
Lord Belfort answered.
Khon Ma has assaulted you directly, and such an attack must be answered. Khon Ma is also where our hostages are being held, and we must attempt to rescue them if we can.
The mountain passes will be hard, if not impossible, to cross this time of year,
Timold answered.
Our armies in the east could march to Khon Ma easily, but they are too few in number, and we have no way to supply them.
The way over the mountains may be closed, but the roads to the north are open, one of the travelers said, standing up. Both the middle and northern kingdoms are under attack, and they call for your aid. You know that for nearly a year there has been trouble in the northern kingdom, and even more trouble in the kingdom of the dwarves.
What you may not know, Lord Darthon, is that a great army from Khon Ma crossed the mountains before the snows came, to attack the Middle Kingdom as well. Already they have destroyed much, and your allies in the north need your help to drive them off.
Not just crossed the mountains, the oldest-looking dwarf there said. Khon Ma has worse evil working for it than you think. My people are holding off a horde of goblins in the far north. I've no doubt that the foul creatures have tunneled under the mountains and are bringing supplies to the armies of Khon Ma in the west.
Have calls for aid been sent to Midland? Darthon asked.
Some, but we've no way to know if they arrived,
Timold answered.
Even if they have arrived, it will be 2 or perhaps 3 months before ships can sail from Midland.
A fact well known by Khon Ma, Lord Belford said.
Kirill, do you have any advice? What do your elders say? Will your people come to our aid in this time of need?
Darthon asked, looking at the sea elves.
We have had little to do with the affairs of men for many years, the tallest elf answered. A direct assault on Khon Ma seems impossible, but most or even all the army of Khon Ma is already on the western side of the mountains. It would be foolish to let them remain here, and worse than foolish to let them return to the east.
Aye, and what will the sea elves do to stop them?
The old dwarf asked.
Will your people come on land and fight, or will you sail away and leave the poor mortals to their fate?
Alex noted the dwarf's half-hopeful, half-angry tone. Dwarves were not always friendly with elves, and the old dwarf's words were a kind of challenge. At a different time, they might have led to a fight on the spot. But the sea elves, it seemed, were not so easily angered as other elves that Alex knew.
Lord Grimgold, we know well your feelings toward our people, Kirill answered slowly. We cannot blame you for what you feel, but you do not know our history. At this time I cannot say if my people will come in force. The elders of my people are debating the matter even now, though I think that some will come to your aid no matter what the elders say.
Debate?
The dwarf scoffed, shaking his head.
If they talk long enough, this war will be over and there'll be nothing for your people to do but look at the bones.
Enough,
Darthon said sharply.
We have heard from most, but not from all. Master Vankin, Master Taylor, it is said that wizards have wisdom that other men lack. What advice do you offer, now that you see how things stand?
A difficult question, to be sure,
Wayland said, getting to his feet.
Our original quest in coming here was to deal with the man you know as the Lord of Khon Ma. We know him as Jabez. For Master Taylor and I, stopping him must remain our primary goal. We did not expect war to begin so soon, and it appears that our plans must change to meet the current situation. The kingdoms to the north need aid.
the armies of Conmar must not be allowed to destroy them. For myself, I think that my path lies north.
If you go north and reveal yourself to Jabez, he will send everything he can to destroy you, Alex said quickly. The kingdoms to the north need aid, yes, but Jabez must be dealt with. So long as he remains in command of his armies, there is no hope for a lasting victory. With Jabez destroyed, his armies will become less of a threat. We must also consider the hostages that Jabez holds. We cannot abandon them to death, or worse.
You are right,
Waylon replied with a slight smile.
Yet to win this fight, we must take risks. We must all do what we can. It is a risk, but what I can do is go north. I would advise you, Lord Darthon, to send your armies there as well. We will face the armies of Conmar together, even if our victories will be short-lived. We cannot win a complete victory while Jabez remains unchecked, but we can hold off his armies, at least for a time.
Then we will go north, Alex said.
Oh no, my young friend,
Waylon said.
You must continue to Conmar Castle. That is your risk. If we can distract Jabez with our battle to the north, then it will be easier for you to find the Axe of Sundering and stop Jabez once and for all.
Alone? Alex asked. He trusted Waylon, but he wasn't sure that this was the best plan. It was a terrible risk, but what other plan was there? Jabez had to be stopped. His armies had to be stopped. Perhaps splitting up was the only way to accomplish both things and have any hope of victory.
Distraction and deception are fine plans, Grimgold said. But Jabez is also a wizard. He will know where you are, Master Vanken, and he will surely detect young Master Taylor long before he approaches Conmar Castle.
No, he won't, said Waylon. We are hidden from him, at least for the time being. Jabez knows that I am in Jaro, but he does not know exactly where I am. He will only be able to find me when I set my magic loose against his army.
And Master Taylor?
Timold asked. I am unknown to Jabez, Alex said. He does not know I am in this land, and he will not know who or what I am until I reveal myself to him.
You are certain of this? Darthon asked.
Ask Kirill, said Alex. Elves are better at seeing magic than either men or dwarves. Tell them, Kirill, what do you see when you look at Waylon and myself?
I see two men, and no magic at all, Kirill answered slowly. I have some doubt that a wizard would see as I do, but he might. I would not have believed that magic could be so completely hidden, but it seems to be so.
Very well, Darthon said after a pause. I will think on all that has been said. We will meet again after the midday meal. I will announce my decision then.
Everyone stood as Darthon left the open area. Alex watched him go, and then turned his attention to those that remained. Grimgold and the other dwarves stood in a group, speaking quietly. The men from Darthon's kingdom broke into small groups, mixing with the men from the kingdoms of the north. Most of the sea elves had left, but Kirill remained standing in the shade of a tree, watching Alex and Waylon.